Ever fall into those like deep Reddit rabbit holes about retro gaming?
Oh, totally. Hours just disappear.
Today, we're right there with you, diving into one of those stories that feels too wild to be real, but
Oh, it's real. Trust me.
the saga of a guy who went by Socal Mike.
Okay, so comic, I know the name vaguely. What's his deal?
He wanted to build a retro gaming empire, like, really wanted it.
Ambitious, but didn't quite pan out, did it?
That's putting it mildly, but that's what makes it so fascinating.
All right, you've hooked me. Start from the beginning.
Absolutely. So our source material this time, it's actually a biography about Socal Mike.
Someone wrote a whole book about this guy.
Oh yeah, it's a whole thing. And it all starts in Omaha, Nebraska. Midwestern kid discovers the magic of Pong, maybe at a neighbor's or
Don't tell me, Sears Telegames.
Bingo. Those Sears consoles were huge for bringing video games into the mainstream.
For sure. Suddenly, it wasn't this niche tech thing. It was like family entertainment, a whole new world opening up.
And for Mike, it was like a switch flipped. He was obsessed with Atari. I mean, who wasn't? But there's this other thread in the book, too, his thing for the TRS-80 computer.
Oh, wow. TRS-80. Blast from the past. I messed around with one of those in like elementary school.
Really? What was that like?
It was like a whole different world. You could actually make the computer do things,
Yeah.
not just play pre-programmed games.
Which is exactly what Mike was into. He wasn't content just playing, he wanted to create.
No way. He was coding back then.
Oh, yeah. The book talks about the super simple boat racing game he made, used those blocky keyboard characters for graphics.
That's amazing, the dedication, even back then. You can kind of see where this is headed.
Totally. But it wasn't all bedroom coding. He was also a fixture at the local arcade, this place called Yada's.
Yadas, okay. Gotta be honest, that name doesn't ring any bells.
It was the spot in Omaha, apparently. The book describes it as this classic 80s arcade, dim lights, sounds of Pac-Man.
Oh, I can practically smell the stale pizza and Mountain Dew just thinking about it.
Exactly. It was more than just games, it was an experience.
Totally. Arcades were like social hubs, meeting place, competition, bragging rights.
Yeah.
Totally different vibe than playing online.
And it sounds like those Yada's days really shaped him, the community aspect, but also just the business of it all.
Yeah, seeing those machines constantly spitting out quarters must planted a seed or two.
Definitely seems that way. Because from there, his story takes him from Omaha all the way to California. And let me tell you,
That's when things really take off.
oh yeah, California was a whole other level of retro gaming scene. So we've got Mike, king of the Omaha arcades, lands in California, late 90s, dot-com boom is in full swing.
Oh, yeah, everyone and their dog was chasing the Silicon Valley dream.
But Mike's chasing a different kind of treasure, vintage games.
Right.
And California, it's a gold mine. The book talks about these legendary swap meets just overflowing with retro games.
Oh, man, those were the days.
Yeah.
I scored some of my best finds at those swap meets
Yeah.
before eBay took over.
Speaking of eBay, that's where Mike's hustling, buying up those retro finds, flipping them online.
Smart. Capitalizing on the nostalgia wave early on. But eBay takes a cut, right?
Oh, yeah, those fees start eating into his profits. And that's when the entrepreneurial gears start turning.
Gotta love it when that happens. What'd he cook up?
He decides to create his own version of eBay, only for gamers. Calls it Chase the Chuck Wagon.
Chase the Chuck Wagon. Kind of a mouthful, isn't it? What's the reference?
Super obscure Atari game. The book barely even mentions it.
Figures. Well, points for niche appeal, I guess.
Yeah.
But taking on eBay, that's gutsy.
Right. But he's convinced he can build something better. Lower fees for sellers, a real sense of community.
He's capping into that early internet spirit. Remember when online communities were actually communities?
Totally. And
Yeah.
get this, he starts a podcast to get the word out.
A podcast. That's ahead of its time. Early 2000s, there couldn't have been that many podcasts, let alone about retro games.
Oh, he called it Chasing the Chuck Wagon, too.
Of course he did. Classic Mike. What was
Oh,
it
yeah.
like? Just him rambling about Pac-Man for an hour.
He'd talk about his swap meet finds, interview collectors, review games. It actually sounded pretty
I
entertaining.
can almost hear it now, that classic, slightly fuzzy microphone
It's
sound.
like a time capsule. But yeah, he's building a community. The book says he was big on the forums too, spreading the word.
Real hustle. And did it work? Did Chase the Chuck Wagon ever actually, take off?
It did, actually. For a while, anyway. He had hundreds of members, tons of auctions happening.
So what happened? Why isn't Chase the Chuck Wagon the go-to retro gaming site today?
Well, like I said, Mike had a knack for going in different directions.
Let me guess, shiny object syndrome.
You could say that. He gets this idea to pivot to go bigger.
Oh no, bigger. What could be bigger than vintage video games?
Yeah.
He wanted to create a general auction site, like a, and I'm not kidding, an eBay competitor.
Whoa, hold on. He's got this niche community, a growing platform.
Yeah.
And he decides to go head-to-head with eBay. That's brave.
Yeah, maybe brave is one word for it. So instead of sticking with this, like, laser focus on retro games, he goes broad.
Yeah, I'm not sensing a lot of, what's the word, market research behind that decision.
Well, the name he came up with didn't help. Get ready for this, Fundazzle.
Fundazzle. Seriously, it sounds like a discount magic shop.
Yeah, not exactly a name that screams serious eBay competitor.
So what happened? Did Fundazzle manage to, you know, dazzle anyone?
Not so much. The book kind of glosses over this part, but basically it flopped.
Not surprising, to be honest. Trying to be everything to everyone is a recipe for disaster.
Right. It's like, pick a lane. And for Mike, that lane was always retro gaming.
So what did he do? Cut his losses and slink back to the swap meets?
Not Mike. He pivots again. But this time, it's back to his roots. He launches a new platform called Game Gavel.
Game Gavel. Okay, that's a name that actually makes sense. Catchy, on brand.
Yeah, he finally nails the branding, and this time he's serious. Hires developers, convinces some friends and family to invest.
So, real money on the line this time. What made Game Gavel different? What was the pitch?
He wanted it to be more than just another auction site. He wanted to create a community. But he also knew he needed a hook, something to really get people's attention.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What was the grand plan?
High-profile auctions. We're talking rare, valuable stuff. The kind of games collectors drool over.
Like what? Give me some examples.
Okay, picture this. A sealed copy of Stadium Events.
Whoa. The holy grail of NES cartridges. How much did that go for?
Hold on to your joystick, over $40,000.
Seriously? People were dropping that kind of cash on a video game.
On Game Gavel, they were. Right. And it wasn't just a one-time thing. They auctioned off a bunch of rare games, pulled in some crazy bids, Red Sea Crossing, Air Raid.
Wow. He really tapped into that collector's market. So Game Gavel was a success then. He finally hit the jackpot.
That's the thing. It's complicated. Yeah, they had those big auction moments. But as a long-term business, it never quite found its footing.
What went wrong? Was it another one of his pivots?
He did make some, let's call them interesting business decisions. Like at one point, he offered free seller accounts for life.
Free? For life?
Yeah.
That's generous. Maybe a little too generous.
Yeah, not exactly a sustainable business model. And there were other issues, too. The book kind of hints at management problems, communication breakdowns.
Sounds messy. So what was the final verdict on Game Gavel? Did it fade away, get sold off?
It limped along for a while, but eventually Mike pulled the plug, even went back to selling on eBay himself.
Kind of ironic, right?
Full circle. But, you know, it's more common than you think. Entrepreneurs, they get these big ideas, pour their heart and soul into them.
And sometimes reality bites.
Exactly. And in Socolmec's case, I think it was tough for him to reconcile that entrepreneurial drive, that passion, with the realities of running a business. Because it's one thing to love retro games, to collect them, to geek out about them.
It's another thing entirely to turn that passion into a profitable, long-lasting business. 100%. And that's something for all of us to think about, right? Whether we're chasing vintage video games or some other dream, there's always this balance we need to find. The passion, the drive.
And a little dose of reality.
Exactly. Because sometimes the most valuable lessons are the ones we learn from our biggest missteps.
That's a wrap on Socolmec, everyone. From Pong to Chase the Chuck Wagon to Game Gavel and back to eBay, it's been a wild ride.
Absolutely. Proof that the world of retro gaming is full of surprises and cautionary tales.
That's all the time we have for today's deep dive. We'll be back next week with another fascinating story from the world of retro gaming. Until then, keep those joysticks warm.